what I've seen, Hari, is that people who want to build, who want to create, even if they are in large companies, they work pretty hard. You know, even in large companies, 5 to 10% of the people that are really driving those companies forward. And my realization was that if we are going to do that, why not just go do something of my own? And the other thing is, you're right. When you have a family, you have to be very responsible. And the good thing here was that we had between, you know, big companies and startups with 10 plus years of experience. We had seen a few different functions. So we felt relatively, and we had been inside a startup as well. So we were able to calibrate ourselves.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Forbes India's The Startup Fridays, weekly conversations with accomplished entrepreneurs, VC investors, and other folk doing significant work in India's startup ecosystem. I'm Hari Arakli, and my guest today is Ajit Singh, co-founder and executive chairman of ThoughtSpot. Ajit has the distinction of being counted among those entrepreneurs who co-founded $2 billion businesses. Ajit started out with the classic combination of IIT-IIM with a chemical engineering degree from IIT Kanpur and an MBA in finance and information systems from IIM Calcutta. After about a year with PwC, Ajit switched to tech and worked in some very well-known companies, including Honeywell and Oracle, before turning entrepreneur himself. In 2009, he helped found Nutanix with Dheeraj Pandey and Mohit Aaron, where he was also chief product officer. Nutanix is today a listed company in the US. It has made a name for itself, helping enterprise customers manage their cloud requirements and deployments. Nutanix reported $1.2 billion of annual recurring revenue at the end of its Q4 FY22, which ended July 31st, 2022. In 2012, Ajit co-founded ThoughtSpot with Amit Prakash. Today, the company is seen as one of the leaders in providing enterprise customers an easy way to tap data analytics on the cloud. At its last funding round, announced in November 2021, ThoughtSpot was valued at $4.2 billion, with total funding of $674 million at that time. Earlier this month, ThoughtSpot also announced a plan to invest $150 million over the next 5 years to expand its Indian operations. So Ajit, wonderful to have you with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Hari. I appreciate it.
To get us started, maybe you could sort of give us a snapshot of the path that brought you to, you know, the beginnings of your entrepreneurial journey to Nutanix, and then we'll talk about ThoughtSpot as well. Maybe you can give us a snapshot of, you know, that like close to 25-year journey from engineering and MBA to tech entrepreneur. We'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah. I've over the last 25 years, I've been fortunate enough to do a lot of different things. It wasn't planned to be this way, but things kept happening. So my undergrad was in chemical engineering. My goal originally was to come to the US and do a PhD here, but my dad wasn't well towards the end of my undergrad. So I ended up going to MBA school, did my MBA, and then started in management consulting at PwC. So at PwC in management consulting, I was having fun working with senior people, working on some significant business problems. But I realized that the ideas and suggestions that I was coming up with, they were not necessarily always getting implemented. Definitely, I wasn't a part of getting those implemented. I wanted to be a little bit more hands-on. So I switched to product management at a really high-quality company at the time, i2 Technologies. And I found product management to be a really good mix of business and engineering technology. I did that for 3 years at i2 in supply chain planning software space. Then of all places, I went to Honeywell. It's a very different company, but I had a very unique opportunity to work with a leader who wanted to really bring a new kind of user experience to the world of aircraft maintenance. We, in fact, hired IDEO, the world-famous design firm, as an advisor. And the reason I bring it up is this was really a good break for me because I was exposed to design thinking, user experience very early in my career, around 2004, 2005. And those learnings have always stayed with me. Both Nutanix and ThoughtSpot have really focused on user experience, making things simple for people. Did that for 4 years at Honeywell. And then I came to the Valley in 2007 to join Oracle in the database team. It was, again, something very different. I hadn't done that before. But I really enjoyed being at Oracle, learning the internals of databases, and I made friends with really good engineers here. But I realized after coming to the Valley that in big companies, I always gravitated towards opportunities where I could build something from scratch. I could be part of a team that was building something from scratch. And coming to the Valley, the realization was that people here are in the business of starting things from scratch. They're willing to come up with new ideas, taking bets, and executing. So I joined one of the early big data companies, Aster Data. Did that for a couple of years. And then Mohit, Dheeraj, and I thought, why not go start our own company, started Nutanix, and then I started ThoughtSpot. So it's been a very, very diverse set of experiences that I've had over the last 25 years. And I really enjoyed that, just learning new things, doing different things. It keeps me going, for sure.
All right. Before we talk about ThoughtSpot a little bit more in detail, tell us briefly about how Nutanix happened. Did you all attempt any other startups even before that?
So it was sort of a very deliberate process of saying that let's go do a company, then looking at different opportunities, different markets, and picking this space, which was up and coming at the time, virtualization, where we were seeing a lot of new problems come up, infrastructure issues. None of us had done virtualization per se in the before that. But we felt that if we bring sort of a curious mind to this problem and apply our generalist experience across different domains, then we can build something fundamentally new. And I thought that we took a different approach because we didn't come from that space. VMware was really growing at the time. And while with any new shift in technology, a lot of other problems get created, and then you can go solve those problems. And that's fundamentally how the world moves forward. So we saw this opportunity where virtualization was really taking off, but the infrastructure that was used to run these virtual workloads, that hadn't kept pace. That was still the old architecture, even though people were spending a lot of money. It was a very competitive market. There were huge companies like EMC and NetApp, and obviously VMware later on, and Cisco. Everybody was figuring out how to align their products with this new wave of innovation that was happening in the industry. But I felt that us coming from outside the domain was a little bit of an advantage, that we could think out of the box. And we said, why don't we just do everything inside a hypervisor, inside a virtual machine, and bring the whole data center inside a virtual machine, and then have a bunch of them to build a cloud-like scale-out architecture. So it was a bold bet, and we approached it with an open mind. We had never built a company before. We were just three, you know, young people in the Valley, and we reached out to a lot of people that had done pretty well building new businesses. We made them our mentors, advisors, where we recruited them. And we were not shy to go after this opportunity, even though we had to go compete with some really, really big companies with deep pockets.
I'm going to circle back to how you turned entrepreneur a little down the line. Definitely want to know more about that. But tell us about ThoughtSpot, the story of why and how you all started it. How did you and Amit team up?
Yeah, so ThoughtSpot was interesting again. Here, I had briefly come across Amit during my undergrad days, but I didn't know him very closely. And we got reconnected when I was thinking of doing ThoughtSpot. And what we observed here when I was at Aster Data, I saw that people's ability to store data, it was really improving. They could store lots of data, cheaper, faster, better. There were companies like Aster Data. There was Hadoop that was starting to gain traction. And people had lots and lots of data, but how that data was delivered to the end users, that process was still very manual. You needed analysts and data experts to build dashboards, and people had to wait weeks to get those answers. And we said, why can't this be as simple as Google? Why can't people go to a search bar and just ask the question they have and get an instant answer and make a business decision and move on? So maybe it was a bit of a naive thinking, because even once you start mixing search with data and you have to deal with numbers, it is very hard and it's very complex. And all the search that had been done at the time, even now, all of it is for unstructured data, whether it is web pages or catalogs or images, videos, and so on. Nobody had done or successfully done search on structured data. So again, like I said earlier, I'm very passionate about user experience. And I think as technology is evolving, the technology industry is becoming a provider of user experiences. It is no longer about features and functionality or performance. The best user experience is going to win. So we said, this is the user experience we want, and now let's go figure out how to make it technically possible. And then last 10 years, we have done a lot of work to prove that it can be done. And we have now a substantial number of customers that are getting the benefits from our technology, but we still think that we are in early innings. There is a lot of opportunity for us to push this vision forward.
Today, how close are you to, you know, making it as easy as searching for something?
Yeah, I'll just quote our CDO, Sumit Arora, Chief Development Officer Sumit Arora. He sent me this article about a year ago, where Sundar Pichai was talking about how search was still the biggest moonshot for Google. And you can think about a company like Google, obviously billions and billions of users using it on a regular basis. If they are talking about search is still the biggest moonshot, means there is a lot of opportunity to make it even easier. When it comes to data, we are in the very early innings. So I think what we have today is 1,000 times easier than the alternate ways of doing things. If you want to build dashboards, you're looking at a Tableau or a Power BI, and the minimum training class for those kind of products is 3 days. You have to go through a 3-day training. ThoughtSpot is much, much easier, but we believe that there is still a lot of innovation ahead of us in this whole space. We call our mission as making the world more fact-driven. And you can always make the world more fact-driven. It's sort of an infinite mission that we are on, and which is what makes it really exciting, because we can keep iterating, keep making things simpler and simpler, and we'll never be finished.
Explain the name a bit. Is there a story behind it? I mean, ThoughtSpot, to my mind, is fairly distinctive. I don't know if there is any technical sort of connotation to it. What did you want to convey when you thought of this name?
Yeah, actually, the very first name we had come up with originally was Scaligent. And the idea was, how do we scale intelligence? But before we actually launched the company, we realized that it's a bit of a technical name. So we wanted to come up with a name that is more business friendly. It's more friendly to common people, because our target audience, the people that we are trying to empower with data directly, are not necessarily technical people. These are sales, marketing, HR people. Sometimes we would have doctors or teachers using the product. So we wanted to come up with a very simple name. And I always say that naming a company is harder than naming a child, because when you want to name a child, every family member has a voice. But when you have to name a company, all the co-founders have to agree, and you still need to find a domain name. So it is there is an extra bar for naming a company. The idea behind ThoughtSpot is pretty simple. We want it to be a spot where everyone can express their thoughts very freely. So whether it is, if you think about that inside the company, we want people to be able to speak up freely. We want all problems to be openly discussed and heard. And when it comes to the product, if I have a thought in my mind, I want to be able to express that, get an answer, and move on to the next question that I might have.
Okay. All right. What is the earliest commercial solution / product that you came up with? Who were your earliest customers? And then maybe we can dive into what it's like today.
Yeah, so our first product was primarily aimed at proving that search on data can be done. And you can create a search experience that can allow people to ask questions and get answers. So we started the company, and in about 18 months, we had our first beta version. And we signed up a few customers as beta customers. These were not companies that we knew personally. I believe in sort of doing a cold outreach to people and finding customers that way, because that gives you honest feedback. Otherwise, sometimes you can get false positives or false negatives if you go to just friends and family. So these, some of these are still, you know, customers for us till this date. We had companies like TrackPhone, which is a large telecom company here in US. Walmart was one of the customers. We had one of the largest independent accounting firm as a customer. And we learned a lot from them. The advantage of having these relatively more mature enterprise customers early on was that they really pushed the limits for our product. You know, there was the user experience, but also the scale of data, the complexity of data, the security requirements, governance, all of that was very important to them from day one. So we built all of that into the guts of the system that has really helped us scale over time to be able to bring our product to some very, very demanding customers across the globe. Now, where we are today, the core vision has remained the same. Make the world more fact-driven, our core product value prop, making it easy for people to access data, has remained the same. What has changed significantly in the last two and a half years is our distribution model. So when we started, the cloud infrastructure was not good enough for us to run our search engine on it. There was no Snowflake, there was no Google BigQuery, none of these things existed. So we ended up building a solution that that worked better on-prem. But as these cloud data platforms have matured, we transitioned to the cloud, and now we have a SaaS offering that our customers can start very small. They can start as small as, you know, $95 a month and try the product easily and then scale. So we now have, I would say, a wider set of customers that are some of the largest companies in the world, but they're also five people startups that are using our product. That's one evolution. Yeah. The other thing is, what I really quick is also now we enable other software engineers, software developers to bring ThoughtSpot inside their SaaS products. So if someone is building an HR app, a sales app, a marketing app, whatever they might be building, they can inject insights and analytics through what we call a ThoughtSpot Everywhere with our very easy to use APIs. That's been another evolution of the product.
Yeah, in fact, my next question was going to be about this transition. You are now, are you like a 100% SaaS company?
Yeah, all our new customers are SaaS customers, and our existing customers have, a large number of them have moved to the cloud. There are a few that are working on their broader cloud transition. They're moving to cloud data platforms like Google BigQuery and Snowflake and others. So as that happens, we will migrate with them to the cloud as well.
Give us a sort of an overview, a snapshot of ThoughtSpot today. I mean, any which way you want to, just to give us a sense of the scale of your operations. I mean, the number of queries that happen on your platform every day, the number of customers, the number of end users that your technology touches on a daily basis, sort of just, you know, give us a flavor of that.
Yeah, I'll give you some metrics that could be of interest. So four of the Fortune 5 are our customers. Almost 35 to 40% of Fortune 100 are ThoughtSpot customers. So we have had, if you pick any industry vertical, any major industry vertical, one to two, if not more, of the top five would be ThoughtSpot customers. So we've done really well when it comes to global 2000 companies. Our SaaS motion is for mid-market and SMBs is a new one. Our ThoughtSpot Everywhere product line that I talked about, it's been there only for a few quarters, and we already have more than 100 SaaS companies using our product there. So there is that product has taken off really well. And it is telling us that people's desire to consume data and insight outside of BI products is increasing massively. So we believe that that's a big opportunity for us going forward. In terms of size of the company, we are about 800 people globally now.
All right. If you can step back a bit and, you know, give us a little bit of, you know, context in terms of what are some of the biggest data challenges that your biggest customers are facing, where your solutions are relevant and can help. So kind of walk us through those big trends and the biggest data challenges today.
Yeah, so in when it comes to data, the biggest thing that is happening is this creation of what is known as modern data stack. Right? Mm-hmm. Traditionally, you had your transactional app would be, let's say, SAP R3 would be your ERP system. Or maybe you're using Oracle, and then you would have a data warehouse, say a Teradata. Then you're doing reporting on it, say using a business object, or later on Tableau or Power BI, whatever it might be. But now, as data is moving, applications first move to the cloud, SaaS applications. Then the next stage was data warehouses, data lakes. Where people use the term cloud data platform. That moved to the cloud, Snowflake, Databricks, Google BigQuery and others, they became very popular. There are a couple of new roles that have come up in this space. The idea of a data engineer is a very powerful one because data is now being managed as software. So unlike traditional IT processes, now software development lifecycle is being applied to management of data, which means that you can define these data engineers can define data pipelines, how data moves from one location to another. They can monitor observability is a big change that is happening. You can define the transformations you want to do in the data using code, unlike traditional model of using an ETL tool. Here, you can use something like DBT is a new thing where you can write the transformations, execute them inside the cloud data platform, and your data will be ready for analytics. People are talking about a metrics layer, which is headless BI that can allow enterprises to define a common set of metrics, because one big challenge they face is there are various tools defining their own set of matrices, and there can be inconsistencies, right? And then in the at the top, you need something to be able to access the data, to enable the end users, the business people who are on the front lines, merchandisers who are trying to decide what products they should support, they should promote on their websites. Or there are, say, insurance agents, wealth advisors who are coming up with the right products for their clients. Or you might have teachers trying to decide how they should approach different students and who's doing well and who's not doing well and what's working, what's not working. There's all kinds of non-technical people that need to make these decisions. So they need to be empowered with data. And the data in cloud moves so fast. Things are changing so fast. Digital businesses, the decision cycles are shrinking. So the companies are trying to figure out, how do I get this whole thing working? How do I get data from my applications in real time, make it ready for analysis and make it accessible while still making sure that my data is secure and governed in a very, you know, operationally efficient way? And how do I manage these processes as software? So challenges customers face will be around, do I have the right talent? Do I have governance? How do I, there are sort of born in the cloud native companies, but then there are traditional businesses that are trying to move to the cloud. So for them, a cultural change is also a big hurdle. They have to find the right talent. They have to change the mindset of existing people on how they should make more data-driven decisions. It's a very exciting time to be in the data industry. It's become the most important part of an enterprise, and it's become a cliche now when you say every company is a data company and every app has become a data app. But there are certain companies that are doing this much better than others, the ones that have the right sort of leadership and talent and have an open mind to move quickly, experiment, learn, iterate, and keep making progress.
So in this backdrop, tell us about how you see your biggest opportunities today.
So the opportunity for ThoughtSpot is I mean, we are in a very extremely fortunate situation. We are well funded, so we have the ability to scale the business. The data stack, like I said, is changing. And when change happens, customers are open to looking at everything. If they are changing the data warehouse, that's a big change. So they are also thinking, what kind of analytics product should I put on top of this? So that is creating a lot of opportunities for us. And if you look at the industry, there have been some interesting changes in this space. You know, Tableau has been acquired by Salesforce. Looker was acquired by Google. For us as an independent startup company, that's great because we can really scale the business and appeal to customers that are looking for best of breed solutions, right? There'll be some customers that will say, I'll go to one large cloud provider and I'll buy everything from them. But in the modern data stack, what we are seeing more is that customers are interested in bringing the best of breed technology. For a given job, they want to find the best solution. So they want the best front end for their data, modern data stack. And those are the ones that are coming to ThoughtSpot saying that we want to use your search. We want to use your AI-driven analytics engine to make it easy. They want to go to companies like Snowflake and Databricks, which have really strong data platforms. They want to, DBT is a startup. You know, it's these innovations are not coming from the cloud mega vendors necessarily. So the opportunity for us is huge, and we are pretty excited, but also it puts the responsibility on us to make sure that we keep innovating and we ourselves don't become a company that gets disrupted by somebody else. So we are pretty paranoid about that inside the company.
So can you throw the story forward by 5 years? Talk about what you see ThoughtSpot like. What is the kind of company ThoughtSpot's going to evolve into?
Yeah, so I could answer that question on many dimensions. Definitely, we have a very ambitious team and we want to build a large independent company, and the market is huge. So it supports a large company like us as an independent company. Then when it comes to our product, we are continuing to innovate across the board. We are making investment in our search technology. We are pushing the vision forward for our SpotIQ automated insights engine. The other new thing that we have recently launched is what we call as ThoughtSpot Monitor, that allows you to monitor your business in a hands-free way. So we want the system to become smart enough that it can come to the users and tell them what is happening in their business, what is changing, and why that change is happening. Just like Google Weather app can tell us it's going to rain tomorrow, so we can be better prepared. ThoughtSpot Monitor can tell you that your churn for a particular customer segment in a particular geography has increased. So, and here are the reasons it has increased. So you can actually take action. We believe that analytics will become more and more proactive over time, as opposed to people having to go to a tool, ask a question, and get their answer. So that will definitely be something that we hope to accomplish in the next 4 to 5 years. We are not yet, I would say, a product that is used by, you know, millions and millions of people and companies across the globe. But with our SaaS product, our ability to address a customer of any size and customer that might be based anywhere in the world has really increased. So we are investing a lot in that area, and we expect to be in a much broader adoption, much more mainstream adoption in the next few years.
Which are some of the most interesting use cases or sectors that you're looking at? I mean, I would imagine traditionally financial services companies might have looked at data very closely. I'm thinking, you know, since you spoke about large amounts of data and large numbers, you know, even governments would probably want to have an easy way of crunching data in a credible fashion, can look at entire demographics and point of view of healthcare and education and so on. So what are some of the most exciting use cases that you're coming across?
Yeah, so like you said, there are very powerful use cases across all industries. In your traditional financial services, retail companies. There are a lot of use cases around sales and marketing. As companies are becoming more and more customer-centric, everybody wants to understand their customers better, build a customer 360-degree view, understand the user behavior, what they are doing, what are they buying, and how can I promote my products so that more and more customers can use my product, and how do I retain my customers, right? On the flip side, people are also worried about churn because more and more products are now turning into services that are consumed on a subscription basis, and customer retention, there is acquisition, but retention is very important. So there are those kinds of use cases where our customers have been able to really empower the frontline people. If you have 1,000 merchants, as opposed to there being 5 dashboards that are built for everyone and that everyone has to look at and make decisions. If they are making decisions when COVID is happening or some flood is coming somewhere, demand patterns are shifting so quickly now that you need to move fast. You can't wait for a long time. And you need to personalize the insights because every company, every business is starting to offer personalized service to their customers. And you can't do that by looking at coarse-grained, dead dashboards. You know, we say dashboards are dead. It is because it's a very backwards way of looking at your business. Yes, it's fine. You have to look at a dashboard every week, every month. But that is not how you're going to sit down with a particular customer and say, Mr. Customer, I understand you. And here are the best products that will work for you. We also have some very interesting use cases with, I can't name the customer, but say one of the largest police forces in the world. They are using ThoughtSpot to understand a crime situation. You know, if there is a situation, understanding what other crimes have happened in that location and what may be the best way to enter a particular building. Our product is also used for some very interesting use cases like that. But there is a common theme here, which is, we are able to really democratize insights and help our customers, our users, translate them into action so that the insight to action loop is being closed with a product like ThoughtSpot.
Give us a sense of how fast you're growing.
So I can tell you that our cloud products that I told you, they are growing in triple digits. It's a big market. Okay. And with ThoughtSpot everywhere, actually we have seen 300% growth. So product lines are at a different level of maturity and growth, but we are really excited about what we are seeing in the cloud.
And you mentioned building a strong team a little bit earlier. How many ThoughtSpotters are there overall today?
We are about 800 people, Hari.
Okay. And you recently announced a plan to expand significantly in India. You're going to invest $150 million. What's the plan there? I mean, maybe you can give us a sense of what you're already doing in India and then talk about what you want to do.
Yeah, so India's been very important to us. We started our first R&D team there in 2017. And the core idea for us was that we wanted to build a first-class primary R&D organization in India, unlike many other Valley startups, which would do all the cool stuff, the important stuff, the customer-facing stuff here in the US, and they would, look at India as a valuable location, but still the less important work would be given. Here, we decided that from day one, we will have not only just engineers, but also product managers and designers. So, We have this idea of a virtual team, V-team, which you can think of as a pod, which is a self-sufficient autonomous unit that includes a PM, a designer, and a few engineers. And this team can directly interface with customers. So our teams in India are fully empowered, and that has allowed us to build a really, really strong team, a high-quality team, because that allows us to attract high-quality talent. People want to express themselves, and we have teams in India that work directly with our global customers. They understand the needs. They are completely responsible for certain product areas, product lines. I talked about ThoughtSpot everywhere. That is completely done by our India team, or integration with DBT and cloud technologies is being done by India team. So we started in Bangalore. We then, about 18 months ago, we acquired a company called Deota in Hyderabad. So that became our second location in India. And we are now starting a third location in Trivandrum, our third R&D center. So India is roughly about 300 people for us right now. And they're doing amazing, amazing work, high quality work. And we want to really double down on that. And that's what we announced as part of this $150 million that we'll spend over the next 3 years. We will grow these R&D capabilities, but we'll also invest heavily into a few other areas. So partnerships are important. There is a lot of really good global SIs that have significant system integrators, IT services companies that are based out of India. So we'll have a local team working with them. Directly, we are also investing in sales and marketing in India for customers in India and globally as well.
Okay. All right. Let's switch to talking a bit about your personal entrepreneurial journey and, you know, sharing some insights from that. Thinking about starting something is one thing, and actually taking the making the jump is another. And have you thought about what compelled you to become an entrepreneur when you all started Newtonix? And maybe you can think a lot about that.
Yeah, I think it was not just one big event that led to something like that. I think it was a little bit more progressive for me. Like I said, first I started in large companies, but there I sought opportunities that allowed me to work on new things from scratch. Then I came to the Valley, joined a startup, saw what startups are like, learned a lot. And then at some point, you know, we said, why don't we go and try doing something of our own? Because who knows, you know, in future, we might live anywhere in the globe and we may not have the opportunity to be in the Valley and do a startup. Then we gave ourselves a 6 month period. If 6 months we can figure it out, it's great. If not, we'll go find other jobs. So it sort of happened progressively for me. I don't come from a business background. My grandparents were farmers. My dad worked for a state government in India. He was a scientist. So I don't have sort of a history of building businesses. It's just over time things happened. And I also had great support from my wife. She was very encouraging and supportive. I couldn't think of doing anywhere close to what I did without her help and her support. So I just feel like this was just over time it happened.
And I guess the listeners might be interested in just to complete sort of the generational, you know, journey. You started with your grandfather and your dad and your own work. And I was listening to one of your earlier interviews from last year, and I just love the idea. I mean, I love the fact that you said your son was born the week Newtonix was founded. I mean, that must have been something really cool.
Yeah, it all looks fine in the hindsight, but, you know, people said, you are crazy. Why are you doing this right now? I just felt that, what I've seen, Hari, is that people who want to build, who want to create, even if they are in large companies, they work pretty hard. You know, even in large companies, 5 to 10% of the people that are really driving those companies forward. And my realization was that if we are going to do that, why not just go do something of my own? And the other thing is, you're right. When you have a family, you have to be very responsible. And the good thing here was that we had between, you know, big companies and startups with 10 plus years of experience. We had seen a few different functions. So we felt relatively, and we had been inside a startup as well. So we were able to calibrate ourselves and get a sense for what might work. And the other thing we did was, which has become a really a good way for me to think about startups, is I like to look at risks in a startup in two buckets, market risk and execution risk, right? Market risk being, is there a market for what I'm trying to build? What is the problem I'm trying to solve? And then execution risk is, can I build the product and sell it, right? So I'm very risk-averse when it comes to market risks. I don't want to take market risk. I want to go after large existing markets because that is something I can't control. Execution risk is something you can control. if you are able to recruit really good people and then create a culture where they have a sense of ownership, where they feel like it's their company, right? Where, so if that I want it to be as high as possible. So low market risk, high execution risk has been, the way I have thought about doing companies. And, of course, there is a lot of luck involved in these things as well. There is external time. Like I said, if there was no VMware, there would probably be no Nutanix, because VMware came along. It gained the traction. There was in 2008, 2009, there was a financial collapse that led to all the companies in the world wanting to be very efficient. And that's when actually VMware on the server side really gained traction. Right. So all of that had happened to in the industry around us with no contribution from us. Similarly, we are seeing here that data volumes are exploding, cloud data platforms are being built. These are things that are not in our control. They're happening. So you have to be thoughtful and choose what risk you take versus not. At the same time, there is certainly a big factor of luck. Plus the people that you get to work with, you know, sometimes founders get an unfair share of credit for success of their companies. And yes, they also get full blame when something doesn't work. So I guess in that sense, it is fair. But I've come to realize that, you know, it's the team that is so important, people that you are able to bring along the journey and convince them that this is something worth doing. Those things matter so much.
All right. Jumping to ThoughtSpot, at what point did you all know or feel that you were really onto something? What happened, you know, to kind of give you that sense?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there has been a sort of a milestone that we crossed. And I could say that before that, we were not onto something. And after that, we were. I feel like, you know, every 6 months we are building and proving. I don't think... there has been a, so from day one, it's been like that. We set the next goal. We, you know, we either hit it or we miss it. If we miss it, then we make sure that we are going after the right goal and we keep persisting and maybe we get to it in a few months later. And inside the company, I always talk about this idea of 2% done. You know, we are in the big picture, we are still a very small company, but we are no longer a two people startup. There's 800 people in the company. We have global customers and all that. We've raised a good amount of funding. But we always like to say that we are only 2% done, which means that we are always learning. We are always evolving. The world is changing so fast. If you don't have that mentality, then it's very easy to have some level of success, but then also go down very, very quickly. And I'm sure you know about startups like that. So we don't want to become one of those startups. And we always want to feel like we got something more to prove. We have to do more. Right. We have to do more.
Fair enough. Yeah. I guess another way of saying only the paranoid succeed. The Nutanix experience, did that help you in any way in terms of getting things right early on at ThoughtSpot?
Definitely. You know, every experience helps you. Nutanix, I thought the way we deliberately picked a large market where technology had become old, that worked well. And we applied a similar concept at ThoughtSpot that worked well. The focus on experience and user design, making things simpler, thinking about technology, thinking about what problem you're trying to solve for the customer and for whom specifically, what is their day in life like? And how can you make things easier for them? So that really helped. Building a good culture, building a culture where, you know, people have a sense of ownership and belonging, that's really helped. At the same time, there have been a number of things that are very different as well. Nutanix was in IT infrastructure, a very different selling motion. You work with resellers, you can make change in the infrastructure very quickly. You know, every 3 years, people are making new decisions. But when it comes to analytics, it's a business-facing tool technology. And these things become such an integral part of the business that it's very hard to just go in and say, I have a better technology, Mr. or Mrs. Customer, you need to use my technology because it is better. Change management is much, much harder for products like ThoughtSpot. So the selling motion is different. There is a lot of focus on business value selling as opposed to pure cost, performance, and simplification. So there has been a lot of differences as well. And of course, when we started Nutanix, the cloud was in infancy, and now cloud is everything. So the idea of product-led growth, start simple, start enable people to try your product before they buy it. There's been a lot of change in the technology space in general, and we continue to learn and evolve. And that is, frankly, what makes it interesting and exciting.
Okay. You've mentioned user experience a few times through this conversation, and it's pretty clear that that is very central to the work that you do. In a company that is steeped in technology, how do you ensure that, you know, all 800 of you always keep the user experience front and center and sort of not get carried away by all the amazing technology and science that you all are building or coming across?
Yeah, these things become a part of, you know, culture from day one. And if you as a founder are able to establish that, then you can scale it over time. Of course, you have to make sure that as you're recruiting, you're continuously evangelizing. And it also shows in your actions that user experience is actually important, right? So the way we think about our product strategy, the way we think about what to do, what not to do, the amount of investments we make, how much respect we give to designers, all of those things matter. And as people come into the company, they realize that you know, user experience is important, because that's why our customers are buying ThoughtSpot in the first place, because they have plenty of dashboarding tools, but they are spending millions of dollars with ThoughtSpot because it is really democratizing data through a simpler user experience. It does help that in today's world, everybody knows what apps they use on their phone or in their personal life, and they appreciate design a lot more than they did when we started Nutanix. So those things definitely help as well.
So yeah, on the point of culture, you spoke about how everyone is encouraged to speak freely within the company. Can you give us a sense of how that kind of an approach helps you in making important decisions on your product roadmap, on your business operations? Help us understand what that speaking freely translates to into the direction that you decide to go in.
Yeah, sure. Culture is something that I'm very passionate about. We could do a full 1 hour just on that. So, but let me try and address that, you know, more briefly than that. So we use two simple words to describe our culture at ThoughtSpot. We call it selfless excellence. Excellence means we are striving to be the world's best at what we do. And we are striving, which means that we are continuously pursuing excellence. We might make mistakes. It doesn't mean that we'll get everything right, but we'll always be open to acknowledging and learning. But we always do it in a selfless manner, meaning we put the team ahead of ourselves. And for an outsider, these might sound like, you know, cheesy words that kind of sound cute. But if you come to ThoughtSpot and you ask anyone, they'll tell you that this is how we actually operate. You'll see that on a day-in, day-out basis. People are putting team first. And in terms of values, we talk about put the team first, be the best, stay humble, learn from your mistake, and actively weed out politics. You know, no politics. Politics is something we really hate. And if we see any signs of it, we take action. Now, how does it help? I think it helps us in building ThoughtSpot into a place where people enjoy being here. I was in India last week, and people were telling me that when they meet any ThoughtSpotter, whether their current team member or maybe an ex-team member, they always talk about how working at ThoughtSpot was one of the best experiences they've had. Really clean place to work. People are focused on doing the right thing, avoiding the typical workplace politics and other unproductive things that they have to deal with in many other companies. So that's one. Of course, if you create an environment where people, irrespective of their title or role in the company, they can share their thoughts, It allows us to bring the best ideas forward. It allows us to stay connected to our customers. Because think about, you know, when you grow to a certain scale, not everybody is able to interact with customers on a regular basis. But if those ideas can very easily flow, then we can learn more about what's happening. People are not afraid to deliver bad news. There is no such thing as a bad news. There's no such thing as, you know, it's something bad has happened. It's always, we have a challenge, we have a problem, here are the reasons, let's go fix it. And conversely, from our leadership team as well, we are very transparent. Our sales information, for example, is open to everyone. We run ThoughtSpot on ThoughtSpot. We dog food the hell out of our product. And or as our CMO likes to say, we drink up our own champagne. So there is a version of ThoughtSpot called champagne that we internally use. And that is open to everyone. So everyone can see how are we doing in our business? What kind of customers are we getting? How much are they paying us? How is this quarter looking? How customers are engaging with? All of that information is available to everyone, which means that they can build a broader view of what is happening in the company and not be just limited to their job. People learn, they make better decisions, they have more context. We share our board decks with the team. It's an extremely open culture, and I feel like, you know, that's the right way of building a company. And personally, I really think that, you know, journey is the reward. Obviously, success is good, but journey is the real reward. And doing it with the right people in the right way is the only thing I can ask for.
Very nice. Very well put. Okay, switching to another aspect of the startup, you know, of building a startup, where I'm really interested in knowing your views. As you know, you know, the sort of the Indian startup scene today is definitely one that has gone the VC funded route, and you are of course also building a company that's been substantially funded by VC and PE money. Can you talk about you know, how that changed things for ThoughtSpot in good ways or some unexpected ways?
You mean VC funded as opposed to bootstrapped?
Right.
Sure. Yeah. So, look, there is no one path to success. You can, of course, build good companies bootstrapped as well. There is plenty of examples. It really depends on how you approach it. Though I would say that if you have clarity on the market and the problem you're trying to solve, and you have reasonable confidence in being able to monetize your solution, it's very important that you move quickly. Otherwise, the window of opportunities can shut down. So we have chosen to raise external capital in both companies. And really, it's not about the capital, actually. It's if you have a good story, if you have a good team, you can raise money from a lot of sources, maybe, you know, plus or minus 10%, 15% valuation. But you can raise money. For us, what's been important is to bring along the right investors. You know, we have to have people around the board table who could potentially be co-founders for us, you know, that people that we would enjoy working with. And that's the lens that we have applied in selecting the investors that we brought on board. And that has worked beautifully for us. We have a great board. They give us good feedback. They keep us honest. They ask us tough questions. But they're never, you know, trying to micromanage us and tell us exactly how we should be building and running the company. And it also works because we hold ourselves to a really high bar, in which case it means that if there are problems, we are the first ones to realize and acknowledge and fix them. And if you can do that, I think, you know, a VC-funded model works well. But ultimately, you have to respect the fact that you have raised money from someone else, and that should give you a sense of accountability that you want to give them good returns. They have put their faith in you. You have to commit to the problem long term, and you have to make sure when you're starting that the problem you're solving is worth solving. Oftentimes, people get so focused on raising money that they want to come up with a story that will be fundable. I always tell young entrepreneurs that you think about your own time. Don't worry about money right now. You are going to spend next 10 years. Do you want to? Is this a problem that you're passionate about that you will recruit other people for, whether they're investors or your team members? And make sure that you are convinced that you're solving the right problem before you raise money from someone else.
Fair enough. Can you talk about I mean, looking back, what have been some of the toughest challenges you had to tackle in building ThoughtSpot? I mean, both professionally and at a personal level, I mean, you know, in terms of your leadership journey and so on. Let's talk about the professional, the company part first. What are the, like, maybe top two or three biggest challenges that you tackled so far?
Yeah, so look, it's not easy to build a company in a space as competitive as BI. When we were starting, people said, you know, there is a lot of other BI companies. Why do we need another one? But we were convinced that the world is ready for the third generation of technology in this space. If business objects was and others were generation one, then Tableau, Power BI, and others generation two, we had a non-linear change that we were making. So we were very convinced. We realized that it'll be hard. The whole thing is not easy. But we have persisted, and that has really led to the success, little success that we've had so far, and we'll continue to grow. So that's been a big one. When we started, there was no cloud. So we were in this sort of situation. We had to go and build our own backend that could power our search. And then we had to go through the transition as cloud infrastructure matured. So that was a big challenge, I would say. And I say, you know, building the company and scaling culture is always hard. And that's been something that we have invested a lot of time and energy in. Now, that said, I will say that we have never had a situation where we hit a ball and we are about to die and we have no answer other than pray. I always feel like if you have an open environment, if you have a good team that's willing to work together, you can overcome any challenges, any challenge. So I've never felt that we are sort of cornered and we don't have a way forward. We always have had a way forward. But, you know, building companies is not easy. There's all kinds of issues.
And as a corporate and tech leader, I mean, for the, I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, for the first six odd years, you were also CEO of ThoughtSpot, and then you brought in a professional CEO. Of course, you knew him from the Nutanix days. Were there things that you had to unlearn?
Yeah. So the relationship that Sudhish and I have is pretty special. Sudhish Nair, he was the president at Nutanix. He joined us pretty early when we were 15 people. He ran sales there, built the top line to over $1 billion. And sometimes when a founder is not scaling, the board would step in and bring in a new CEO. In my case, I actually recruited Sudhish into the company. We had raised a new round and we are looking to scale the business. So I was recruiting for a president. And then I started talking to Sudhish and I realized that the two of us together can build a bigger and better company. So I brought him in, and the way we operate is very boundaryless, actually. My background is product, his background is in sales, but both of us just work together and do whatever is needed. I do get involved actively in sales and he's actively engaged in product. And like I said, it's a very unique relationship and I wouldn't do it if it wasn't for Sudhish. And for this kind of a structure to work, you need to have a lot of mutual trust and mutual respect. And we are lucky to have that at ThoughtSpot.
Okay. One thing that I'm kind of always asking, any chance I get you know, with someone like you, many Indian entrepreneurs have gone from India and then succeeded really well, especially in the US. Can you talk about that? I mean, the sort of over, I mean, in a general sense, folks know that, you know, the sort of business enablement environment in the US helps. And of course, the long history of, you know, government investment and private entrepreneurship in science-based technology. So in a general sense, one gets to figure out what are some of the enabling factors. But I would like your personal thoughts on, you know, how building your companies in the US helped. And then maybe you can also talk about advice to aspiring entrepreneurs in general, and more specifically for those who are intent on building something in technology from India today.
So you're asking, coming from India and building this business in US, what helped us here? And then secondly, what, how can Indian entrepreneurs that are based in India think about building? So, look, I think there is enough that has been written and said about this already. I'll give you my perspective and it's not just India, you know, people from various countries have come and done very well in US, and yeah. It's a very welcoming and supporting country in that sense. I feel extremely fortunate to have landed in Silicon Valley, where people are willing to bet on you, you know, even though you may not have any resume in terms of having done something. They are willing to bet on you with their money if they're an investor. They're willing to leave big cushy jobs in large companies and come and work with you, join forces. So I feel very fortunate to have that opportunity. What has helped us is being, you know, connecting with really good people that have the right experience, but at the same time, having confidence in our own judgment as well. So that balance is what is important. Where you can have confidence in your experience and judgment, but also have an extremely open mind to learn quickly. You know, one thing we learn in India is how to learn. That's something, and that comes in very handy. If you're able to really be authentic about what you know and what you don't know and approach people and ask them for help, they are extremely willing to help. That's one advice to people building companies in India. India has changed so much. You know, I was actually in Bangalore till 2006, and there were practically no product companies at the time, other than some small setups that some of the larger companies like Oracle and Cisco might have had. And then we saw the early phase of consumer startups being built in India, companies like Myntra and Flipkart and others. In the last 5 years, we have seen the rise of this sort of Indian SaaS ecosystem. And I frequently talk to a lot of entrepreneurs that are building companies out of India. They're hustling and selling, doing sales and marketing and everything else out of India and selling to customers globally. It is actually inspiring. I'm learning a lot on how we can do more from India, even for our global customers. We are working on that. And also, you know, many of them would have typically, when they reach a certain scale, they come to the US and have a founder here, and then they will start selling to customers here. So I think SaaS and cloud have changed a lot of things. You can build products anywhere. You can learn more by looking at data that is coming from your customers, how they are using the product, which features are being used more, which are not being used more, and so on. Of course, if you want to sell to large enterprise customers in the US, you do need a local presence. And I'm seeing Indian startups making the transition really well with the thing that I said earlier. They reach out to people that have done it before, and they are willing to learn. And that desire and willingness to learn is perhaps the, you know, the biggest reason to succeed.
All right. Fantastic. So many more questions, Ajit, but I know that, you know, time's come to let you go. Thank you again, sir, for making time for this really wonderful conversation. And definitely appreciate that you joined us late in the evening there for you. Definitely hope to keep the conversation going.
Thank you, Hari. It was a fascinating discussion. Really good questions.
That was Ajit Singh, co-founder and executive chairman at ThoughtSpot, happening company with big plans for operations in India as well. That's it for this week's Startup Fridays. Next week, I'm going to take a break. I will be back in Ottawa. Wherever you are listening to us, I hope you're staying safe and doing well. Have a wonderful Friday and a great weekend ahead.